Chechnya is perhaps the most unique geographic location on the European continent today. It is a hard mountainous land that straddles the north slope of the Greater Caucasus Mountains, similar in both geographic and population size to Slovenia. It is the home of the ethnic Chechen people who speak their own indigenous Chechen language, related to the other northeast Caucasian languages nearby that also straddle the border between Europe and Asia. Chechnya is also one of the few overwhelmingly Muslim-majority regions that can be found on the European continent today. And despite all of these things giving Chechnya a highly unique cultural identity, Chechnya is, theoretically speaking at least, governed as a republic of the Russian Federation. Although it is the least Russian part of Russia in just about every way imaginable. Unlike every other administrative region of Russia, Chechnya's current leader is formally referred to by the title of the Father of the People, and his name is Ramzan Kadyrov. He has personally ruled Chechnya continually for nearly the past 20 years with almost complete impunity and autonomy from Moscow, as if it were a medieval fiefdom rather than a modern democratic republic. Unlike anywhere else in Russia, federal soldiers under the control of the Kremlin are not even allowed to enter into Chechnya without Kadyrov's own explicit prior personal approval, and he has even threatened to have his own private army open fire on Russian federal troops if they ever do so. And speaking of his private army within Chechnya, Kadyrov effectively controls his own entire army that's almost completely independent of the rest of the Russian armed forces. Known as the Kadyrovsky, as many as 70,000 men are now a part of this private army, who, unlike any other soldiers in Russia, have all pledged personal loyalty to the person of Ramzan Kadyrov himself, rather than to the Russian state or to the Kremlin's traditional chain of command. This represents nearly 1 in 10 of all the men living in Chechnya who have effectively sworn personal military fealty to their leader, the Father of the People, making Chechnya among the most heavily militarized societies on the entire planet, that is comparable to both North Korea and Eritrea in scale. Despite Chechnya having a total population of only 1.5 million people, Kadyrov's own personal army is larger than the standing army of Canada is today. Despite Canada's population being more than 26 times larger, Kadyrov has deployed this large personal army to assist with Russia's wars in Georgia, Syria, and especially in Ukraine. But he has also wielded it to pursue his own personal objectives and ambitions as well, such as targeted assassinations and attacks against his political enemies and critics all throughout the world, and by enforcing his own legal autonomy within Russia. Kadyrov has frequently stated that his own personal law in Chechnya overpowers the federal laws of Russia, and Russia has rarely ever contradicted him. As a heavily conservative Muslim society, Kadyrov's own personal interpretation of Islamic Sharia law has been largely allowed to have been put into place in Chechnya, despite Russia's clearly secular constitution. Women in Chechnya are expected to wear traditional headscarves while out in public, and women who are caught out in public without one may become harassed by the Kadyrovsky or even shot by them with paintball guns in targeted drive-by shootings, with numerous videos of this taken by the Kadyrovsky and released online as a warning. There are religious bans in place on both alcohol and gambling within Chechnya, while Kadyrov has also frequently spoken out in favor of polygamy within Chechnya as well, even going so far as to say that implementing polygamy could help Russia escape from its chronic ongoing demographic crisis. He himself is believed to have at least 3 wives of his own, and beginning in 2017, the Kadyrovsky began carrying out a massive pogrom within Chechnya against the region's LGBT community, in what the Council of Europe has since described as the single most egregious example of violence against LGBT people in Europe that has occurred in decades. The media and the press within Chechnya is entirely controlled by Kadyrov and his regime, and it often feels like an information black hole in Europe. And despite the almost complete autonomy within Russia and the flagrant disregard for Russian federal laws, Russia still sends Chechnya billions of dollars a year in subsidies to keep it around. Because the line between the government in Chechnya and the family of Ramzan Kadyrov is extremely blurry, these billions of dollars in subsidies are massively embezzled by Kadyrov himself and often vanish once they arrive in Chechnya without a trace, which is how Kadyrov and his family are able to afford their opulently lavish lifestyle that he loves to flex on his social media profiles, complete with private jets, one of Europe's most spectacular collection of supercars, palatial properties around the world, and even a private zoo filled with exotic animals. It's also how Kadyrov is able to afford to pay for his tens of thousands of private soldiers, how he pays for his competitive UFC fight club, and how he's been able to construct monumental architectural projects in Chechnya, including what has recently become the continent's largest mosque. As in other dictatorial regimes throughout history, the Kadyrov family utterly dominates the political environment within Chechnya, with a highly developed cult of personality based around the figure of Ramzan Kadyrov himself. Ramzan's own father, Akhmad Kadyrov, also ruled over Chechnya briefly before him until he was assassinated in 2004. And after decades in power since then, Ramzan Kadyrov has been carefully positioning his own children into positions of power to eventually succeed him one day in Chechnya as well, making Chechnya not only Europe's sole remaining totalitarian regime in the 21st century, but the only region of Europe that is still clearly ruled by a familial quasi-monarchy under what has effectively become the Kadyrov family dynasty, which, along with the cult of personality, the hyper-militarism, and the assassinations of dozens of dissidents abroad, have all sometimes earned Chechnya the nickname of Europe's North Korea. And in order to understand why Chechnya is like this today and why it operates so differently from the rest of Russia and from the rest of Europe, it helps to understand some of this deeply complicated region's history. The North Caucasus historically existed at the frontiers of three great empires, the Persians and the Ottomans to the south and the Russians to the north, all of whom were linguistically and culturally distinct from the rural mountainous terrain between them, inhabited by the various Caucasian peoples. One of these groups in the North Caucasus, the Chechens, largely practiced the Christian faith alongside of their traditional pagan beliefs for centuries, until the late 18th century, when the Russian Empire began initiating a full-scale campaign of conquest in the region. Waged over decades, the Chechens began rapidly adopting the Islamic faith through the early 19th century as it became increasingly associated in the region with resistance against the encroaching armies and settlers coming from the Orthodox Christian Russia. After multiple brutal wars and campaigns that went on for decades, the increasingly Muslim Chechens were one of many foreign peoples to ultimately be crushed by the Russians and subsumed into their empire by 1861. Since then, there have been multiple Chechen rebellions that have erupted against both Russian and later Soviet control, and just as many attempts by the Russians and Soviets to consistently crush them. After the collapse of the Russian Empire in 1917, Chechnya managed to briefly reassert its independence from Russia as a part of the Mountain Republic that was established across the North Caucasus by the various Caucasian peoples there. This independent state managed to attract notable international recognition at the time by the United States, the United Kingdom, Germany, and Italy. But in the chaos of the Russian Civil War, it was eventually smashed by the Bolsheviks and fully reincorporated back into the Russian Soviet Republic. Unlike other entities in the Soviet Union, like Georgia or Armenia, that became full-blown separate Soviet republics, Chechnya was eventually incorporated as merely an autonomous republic within the Russian Soviet Republic, ultimately still leaving it as a territory of Russia's. During the Second World War in 1944, Stalin baselessly accused the Chechens as a collective people of collaborating with the Nazi invaders, and ordered their entire population to be forcibly deported to Central Asia, during which as many as one-third of the entire Chechen population were killed, which was later recognized by the European Parliament in 2004 as a Soviet-era act of genocide. For 13 long years until 1957, the Chechen survivors remained exiled from their homeland and abandoned in refugee camps all across Central Asia. Ramzan Kadyrov's own father, Akhmad Kadyrov, was born in 1951 in modern-day Kazakhstan in one of these refugee camps for the exiled Chechen population, and he and his family were not allowed to return back to their own homeland until he was 6 years old in early 1957, an upbringing that no doubt had a significant effect on his outlook on life and that of his son, who currently rules over Chechnya today. The years of exile and the preceding century of Russian imperialism and conquest also obviously left a deeply entrenched sense of resentment among the Chechens toward the Russians. And so, when the Soviet Union itself suddenly collapsed in 1991, and all of the Soviet republics began declaring and successfully gaining their independence, many Chechens came to believe that their own time for ultimate independence from the Russians had finally come as well. After all, Chechnya had been conquered and incorporated into the Russian Empire decades later historically than Georgia or Armenia, which both were able to gain their independence from Moscow in the early 1990s with relatively little pushback from the Kremlin. And so, just before the Soviet Union was about to cease to exist, Chechnya seized on the moment to unilaterally declare their own independence from Russia in September of 1991. At which point, the Russian government was busy dealing with its own mess of problems following the Soviet collapse, and initially largely left the Chechens alone, giving them a couple of years to attempt and build their new country. Though neither Russia nor any other country in the world ever recognized Chechnya's independence as legitimate. But near the end of 1994, Russia finally got around to dealing with Chechnya and launched a full-scale invasion of the territory in the name of maintaining territorial integrity, initially expecting a rapid victory with their enormous numerical superiority and technological advantages. The war in Chechnya for Russia quickly devolved into a brutal quagmire that would last for the next 20 months. It became the most ferocious war fought in Europe since the Second World War, and would only become surpassed in intensity and scale decades later with the Ukraine invasion. Thousands of Russian soldiers were killed in action, and struggling to deal with Chechen resistance, the Russians resorted to utilizing overwhelming artillery and aerial attacks to completely flatten Chechnya's cities, including the capital, Grozny. The Russians also resorted to a dual strategy on the ground in Chechnya to deal with a raging Chechen insurgency. They began opening up what they called filtration camps to separate the general population from partisans that were effectively concentration camps, while at the same time, they also carried out what they called cleansing operations that involved military sweeps of locations they believed to be hosting partisans, which frequently involved collective reprisals against entire local Chechen communities, like looting, hostage-taking, torching houses, and summary executions. Russia's strategy in Chechnya was designed to intimidate the population into surrender, but it almost always had the exact opposite effect and only encouraged even more fanatical and stubborn resistance instead. It's likely that over the course of the first modern war in Chechnya, more than 100,000 Chechen civilians were directly killed by the results of military actions, equaling roughly 10% of the entire Chechen population at the time. Decades later, following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the Ukrainian government would become the first country in the world to formally recognize Russia's war on Chechnya in the 1990s as a genocide of the Chechen people. Unable to effectively crush the Chechen insurgency and with domestic support for the war crashing on the home front with the thousands of mounting soldier fatalities, Russia eventually withdrew from Chechnya in August of 1996 and agreed to an uneasy ceasefire, leaving Chechnya behind as a de facto but unrecognized independent state. Ramzan Kadyrov's father, Akhmad Kadyrov, was a leading figure among the Chechen separatist resistance during this first war. He had managed to rise to become Chechnya's Grand Mufti, a religious leader, by 1995, and he had cultivated his own militia force to become one of Chechnya's most powerful warlords. But in the aftermath of the ceasefire in 1996, Chechnya might have gained their de facto independence from Russia, but their entire society had also been shattered by the devastating scale of the war. And it was almost immediately a failed state in the center of the Caucasus. Infighting between various warlords in Chechnya following the ceasefire was a common occurrence, while radical Islamic extremism began finding fertile ground in the broken country as well, that attracted large numbers of foreign jihadists to Chechnya from all across the Islamic world. The rising numbers of radical jihadists in Chechnya began totally changing the nature of the Chechen independence movement, away from one of secular Chechen nationalism and into one of Islamic jihad instead. As had largely happened during the Russian wars against Chechnya during the 19th century, Chechnya's embrace of more radical Islamism in the 1990s was also seen by many as an ideological method to further resist Russia's attempts to reconquer Chechnya. Thus, in the aftermath of the first war in September of 1996, Chechnya was transformed into a radical Islamic state in Europe, with extremely strict Islamic Sharia law that resembled the Taliban system in Afghanistan, and a mandatory death penalty for homosexuality. As a much more moderate Muslim himself, Chechnya's Grand Mufti, Akhmad Kadyrov, grew increasingly horrified at the direction that the independent Chechnya was heading in, and it contributed to his growing disillusionment with the cause of Chechen independence. After 3 years of turbulent independence in August of 1999, Russia initiated a second full-scale invasion of Chechnya, just at the same time as Vladimir Putin first rose to power himself in the Kremlin. Putin vowed that he would succeed in Chechnya where his predecessor had failed, and so he implemented multiple different strategies. First, he implemented a wartime media blackout that restricted the Second War's potential impacts on public support. And most critically, Putin was acutely aware of the internal divisions that had emerged within Chechen society itself this time. Putin was able to convince Akhmad Kadyrov and other disillusioned, more moderate warlords in Chechnya to switch sides over to Russia this time and to abandon the cause of independence. Attracted by the prospect of crushing their rival radical Islamist factions in Chechnya and then becoming promoted to the territory's new ruling class, this wasn't exactly a hard decision for them to make. Many Chechens interpreted their decision to switch sides as collaboration or betrayal, while others accepted it as a pragmatic compromise. By May of 2000, after months of savagely intense fighting that had once again left tens of thousands of Chechen civilians killed, along with thousands of soldiers on both sides, Russia and their allied Chechen militias, including the Kadyrovs, had managed to re-establish Russian control over the whole of Chechnya for the first time in nearly a decade. And as his reward for switching sides, Akhmad Kadyrov was personally appointed by Putin to be Chechnya's new leader over the summer of 2000. For the next few years, Akhmad's youngest son, Ramzan, was designated by his father to lead and build up the Kadyrovsi as the family's personal security force in Chechnya. The Kadyrovsi had an important job to fill, because despite Russia having retaken control over Chechnya, the lingering radical Islamist insurgency continued in the remote and difficult-to-access mountains of the territory. Putin quickly came to rely on his appointed puppets in Chechnya and their Kadyrovsi militia to take over the lead in conducting the dangerous job of counterinsurgency in the territory. Rather than having to rely on Russian soldiers to conduct counterinsurgency operations in Chechnya who didn't speak the Chechen language and who didn't understand Chechen and Islamic cultural sensitivities that could have led to the same cycles of violence and growing insurgency support that Russia struggled to deal with during the first Chechen War, the Kadyrovsi were fellow Chechens who excelled at dealing with the lasting insurgency among other Chechens in Chechnya. By 2001, Russia withdrew all of the remaining soldiers from Chechnya and left the remaining counterinsurgency operation entirely to the Kadyrovsi, solving another one of Russia's problems from the first war that kept seeing thousands of ethnic Russian soldiers getting killed policing the territory. That kept demoralizing the Russian public and kept eroding their support for the war. By handing off all of the counterinsurgency operations to the Kadyrovsi instead, Putin was able to minimize the cost that was borne to ethnic Russians in order to maintain order in Chechnya, which dramatically boosted his own political popularity in Russia by restoring Chechnya back to Russian control with a minimal cost borne to ethnic Russians themselves. And he continued rewarding Akhmad Kadyrov for this valuable service by opening up the spigot of financial subsidies directly to him and his regime, and by allowing him to generally spend the money however he saw fit. However, Akhmad Kadyrov's rule in Chechnya with Russia's backing would ultimately not last for very long, because in May of 2004, during that year's Victory Day celebration in the Chechen capital of Grozny, a bomb planted beneath a stadium by the remaining radical Islamist insurgents exploded that killed Akhmad Kadyrov and his eldest son and presumed heir, along with eight other unfortunate people. Almost immediately afterward, Akhmad's sole remaining son, Ramzan, was rushed into the Kremlin in Moscow to meet with Putin personally. But there was a legal problem that prevented Ramzan from immediately succeeding his father as Chechnya's new leader. The Chechen constitution that the territory had adopted under Akhmad's rule clearly stipulated that the leader of Chechnya needed to be at least 30 years old. And at that time, in 2004, Ramzan was still 3 years short at only 27 years old. So, rather than immediately installing him in place, Putin put the pieces into motion that effectively created a sort of regency council for the young Ramzan that would maintain Chechnya's affairs until he came of age to rule 3 years later. Once he finally did turn 30 years old in 2007, Ramzan Kadyrov was formally appointed by Putin himself as Chechnya's new president, a position that he has continually maintained to the date of this video's release ever since, and beginning the dynastic succession and de facto monarchy in Chechnya that has persisted as well. And immediately upon gaining full power in Chechnya in 2007, Ramzan Kadyrov began taking multiple steps to permanently cement his own authority and power in the region that would transform Chechnya into effectively his own personal modern-day Khanate. First of all, he immediately began incorporating certain elements of traditional Islamic Sharia law within Chechnya, both to fit his own propaganda purposes and to undermine the cause of the radical Islamist insurgency that was still simmering in Chechnya. He immediately reintroduced bans on alcohol and gambling within Chechnya, ordered that lessons in the Quran and Sharia be taught within Chechen schools, and issued a decree mandating that women in Chechnya must wear headscarves while out in public, instructing the Kadyrovsi to act as the religious police and to harass women in public found without them. While not as extreme as the hardcore Taliban-style Sharia law that was implemented within Chechnya during the late 1990s, these new religious laws that Kadyrov introduced in Chechnya still directly violated Russia's explicitly secular constitution nonetheless. But Putin tolerated them because of the effect they had on combating the Islamist insurgency in Chechnya. By incorporating some elements of Sharia law within Chechnya, Kadyrov was able to cleverly undermine radical Islam's appeal as an ideology of rebellion in the territory, while the Kadyrovsi continued suppressing what remained of the insurgency through targeted and calibrated violence. By 2009, the strategy had proved largely successful and the insurgency was largely suppressed and dormant, crippled by Kadyrov's hybrid system in Chechnya that carefully blended traditional and religious customs in the territory with loyalty to the Kremlin. With the insurgency in Chechnya largely under control by 2009, Kadyrov was also able to unleash the Kadyrovsi on his own personal political enemies and critics, both within Chechnya and beyond, in order to further secure his own grip on power, by leaving behind no possible alternatives to him. In November of 2006, the Kadyrovsi assassinated one of their own former mutinied commanders on a street in Moscow just 2 kilometers away from the Kremlin. While in the same month, a report released by Human Rights Watch claimed that the use of torture in both official and secret detention facilities was so widespread and systematic in Chechnya, and that forced disappearances in Chechnya were already so widespread and systematic that they constituted crimes against humanity. They would later allege that between 1999 and 2017, a total of around 3,000 people would simply disappear within Chechnya following the rise to power of the Kadyrov family. Months before this report was released, a veteran Russian reporter named Anna Politkovskaya, who extensively reported from Chechnya on human rights abuses and torture, was mysteriously found shot dead in the elevator of her apartment building in Moscow, a crime that has remained officially unresolved to this day. In 2009, the most powerful rival warlord to Kadyrov in Chechnya, who commanded his own separate militia, named Sulim Yamadayev, was mysteriously shot to death in an underground parking garage in Dubai, after which 2 Chechen nationals were later found by a UAE court to have been responsible. In the same year, the former bodyguard of Kadyrov who defected to Austria and became an outspoken critic of the regime, a Chechen man named Umar Israilov, was also gunned down by attackers in Vienna. Several Chechens were later found guilty for the assassination by an Austrian court, and during the subsequent investigation, it was rumored that there existed a hit list in Chechnya that had around 300 names on it who Kadyrov had ordered to be killed. The Austrian police themselves would later conclude that the assassination of Israilov in Vienna was likely ordered by Kadyrov himself. By eliminating his political rivals and silencing his critics through targeted assassinations like this, Kadyrov was able to leave behind no possible alternative to his own personal rule in Chechnya for Putin to ever replace him with, while his steady elimination of the lingering Islamist insurgency in Chechnya transformed him into an extremely valuable asset for Putin as well. Kadyrov and his Kadyrovsi militia were able to introduce stability to Chechnya through harsh repression, verging on the edge of totalitarianism, and by adopting elements of Islamist governance to the territory as well, which all kept Russia's restive North Caucasus region stable enough for the Kremlin to begin focusing on other foreign policy objectives in Georgia, Syria, and especially in Ukraine. In exchange for maintaining the peace in Chechnya and keeping a lid on the territory's long history of separatism from Russia, and for pledging his own personal loyalty to Putin, Putin allowed Kadyrov to maintain a de facto separate legal system within Chechnya, granted him nearly complete autonomy to do whatever he pleased in Chechnya, and even acquiesced to Kadyrov effectively maintaining his own separate personal private army in Chechnya that remains almost entirely separate from the rest of the Russian armed forces even today, and whose soldiers swear personal loyalty to Kadyrov himself rather than to Chechnya or to Russia. Kadyrov effectively became a personal vassal of Putin's, a sort of medieval baron installed into power in Chechnya to enforce the Kremlin's authority. And yet, Putin and Kadyrov became increasingly reliant on each other to maintain both of their positions. Without the unwavering loyalty of Kadyrov, Putin would risk Chechnya reverting back into the era of separatism in the 1990s that had cost Russia dearly. And without Putin, Kadyrov simply stood to lose everything, especially because in addition to granting him wide-sweeping autonomy to do whatever he pleased, Putin began showering Kadyrov and his regime with enormous amounts of Russia's fossil fuel wealth to continue keeping him loyal as well. The exact amount of federal subsidies that the Russian central government provides to Chechnya every year varies. But as of 2022, reports appear to indicate that Moscow was providing roughly $6.5 billion worth of subsidies every year to Chechnya, as claimed by Kadyrov himself in a statement that he posted to his Telegram account. According to the Russian government's own budget data, these subsidies provide roughly 80% of Chechnya's total funds today. And Kadyrov's position in nearly absolute power in Chechnya has enabled him to massively embezzle these funds for himself and for his own family. There were early estimates before Kadyrov even formally became the head of Chechnya that believed he was embezzling at least one-third of all the Russian federal funds to Chechnya for his own personal use. And that percentage has likely only increased ever since then. For years under Kadyrov's regime, Chechnya was informally known within Russia as the country's financial black hole, where billions of dollars worth of government funds simply disappeared every year without a trace. The line between the Chechen government and Ramzan Kadyrov himself is extremely blurry, and so the embezzling of all of these funds from Russia over decades has likely made Kadyrov one of the wealthiest men alive in the world today. And while the true scale of his wealth is completely opaque and non-transparent, there are many, many signs as to how massive it probably really is. In March of 2017, the Russian rapper Temati posted this image on his Instagram account to his 20 million followers, thanking Kadyrov for having provided him with a spare room aboard his lavish private jet, apparently not realizing that Kadyrov's ownership of this private jet wasn't public knowledge. The post was almost immediately deleted, but investigators quickly found another post on his Instagram account that he had made previously back in 2013 from the exact same jet that was geotagged at the Harrods Aviation Terminal at the London Airport in London, a luxury terminal that's reserved only for the super rich. U.S. financial authorities have noted Kadyrov's international luxury property portfolio spanning across Dubai and Moscow, his luxury car collection that includes a Rolls-Royce Cabriolet and a 1-of-20 Lamborghini Reventin, an image he released in 2022 where he can be seen wearing Prada designer combat boots, a private zoo stuffed with exotic animals, and a number of absurdly lavish birthday parties. For his 35th birthday party in 2011, Kadyrov was able to attract a number of major foreign celebrities to attend it by offering them undisclosed payments, including Jean-Claude Van Damme, Seal, Vanessa Mae, and Hilary Swank, all of which was televised live. During the party, when a journalist asked Kadyrov where all of the money for the birthday party had come from, he simply laughed and said that God had given it to him. Consistently showing off and flexing his lavish lifestyle on social media apps like Instagram and Telegram to his millions of followers, Kadyrov has sometimes been nicknamed as social media's most popular warlord. He was also able to utilize these funds to rebuild war-torn and ruined Chechnya into his own image, complete with a new mega-monumental architecture typical of authoritarian dictators. As early as 2005, shortly after the death of his father, Kadyrov boasted that he would one day construct the largest mosque in Europe within Chechnya, which was eventually completed many years later in 2019 in the small Chechen town of Shali. Officially named as the Pride of Muslims Mosque, it can accommodate more than 30,000 worshippers inside and another 70,000 more on the surrounding grounds, which indeed makes it the largest mosque in Europe today and the largest one that can be found anywhere outside of Asia or Africa, and which has also further helped to cement Kadyrov's legitimacy and legacy in Chechnya by portraying him as the champion of the Islamic faith in Russia. Kadyrov has also been able to utilize the Russian government funds to pay for the salaries, equipment, and upkeep of his Kadyrovsky private army, which Putin has also tolerated because Kadyrov has increasingly outsourced the Kadyrovsky to serve as contract soldiers and assassins for Putin's personal goals as well, that he can use with a degree of plausible deniability. Some soldiers of the Kadyrovsky were deployed by the Russians during their invasions of Georgia in 2008 and of Crimea in 2014. While the highest-profile assassination that might involve the Kadyrovsky took place in 2015, and this one involved one of Putin's political opponents rather than one of Kadyrov's. Boris Nemtsov was a major opposition politician in Russia who was probably the most prominent outspoken critic of Putin's government in the country. He had extensively covered the government's corruption and embezzlement leading up to the Sochi Winter Olympics in Russia in 2014, and he began publicizing Russia's political and military involvement in Ukraine with the annexation of Crimea and the beginning of the war in the Donbass, In early 2015, Nemtsov was busy working on a report to prove that Russian soldiers were directly and actively participating in the war in the Donbass in eastern Ukraine under Putin's own orders, which at the time, the Kremlin was actively denying. Hours after he delivered a speech in Moscow urging the Russian public to come out and march in protest of Russia's support for the war in the Donbass, Nemtsov was walking across a bridge with his girlfriend late at night, only steps away from the Kremlin itself, when 7 or 8 shots from a pistol were fired by an unknown assassin that killed him instantly. 3 years later, 5 Chechnya-born men were found guilty in a court in Moscow for accepting money to assassinate Nemtsov. But the identity and the whereabouts of whoever allegedly hired the men for the assassination have never been officially or publicly revealed, which has led to widespread speculation that it was Kadyrov himself, possibly under the direction of Putin, who was the one that was ultimately responsible, in order to give Putin himself an aura of plausible deniability into the murder of his biggest political opponent. Despite this possible service to Putin, Kadyrov was able to even further solidify his own autonomy and the power of the Kadyrovsky in Chechnya in 2015, when he ordered the Kadyrovsky to open fire on any federal Russian troops found to be present in Chechnya without his own explicit prior permission. With that order in place after 2015 and without Russia's pushback against it, Kadyrov had effectively permanently forced Russia's troops out of Chechnya and secured the monopoly on the use of force within his territory, which also effectively established himself as the leader of a wholly independent regime in Chechnya, only loosely connected to the rest of Russia through a personal union with Putin himself. Following 2015, with the insurgency fully crushed in Chechnya, most of his major political opponents and critics silenced, and with the monopoly on force within Chechnya secured by his removal of federal Russian troops and the presence of his own private army that swore personal loyalty to him instead, and with the spigot of Russian federal money still flooding into his coffers to maintain his loyalty and to outsource his private army as an extension of the Kremlin's with plausible deniability, Kadyrov had finally arrived at the apex of his power within Chechnya, enabling him to begin growing even bolder than ever before. In 2016, after claiming to have won his re-election in Chechnya with more than 98% of the vote, Kadyrov elaborately attended his own victory celebration wearing a full suit of historic medieval period Chechen body armor, complete with a long sword attached to his waist and a spear in his hand, as if he was a feudal lord who stepped directly out of the Middle Ages. Then, Kadyrov and his regime in Chechnya began rapidly gaining international attention and notoriety beginning in April of 2017, when a Russian-language opposition newspaper released the initial report that the Kadyrovsky had begun carrying out an unprecedented pogrom within Chechnya, targeting the territory's LGBT community. Citing unnamed sources within the Chechen Special Services, the report alleged that more than 100 gay men in Chechnya had been forcibly kidnapped, detained in secret prisons, and tortured by the Kadyrovsky, while at least 3 of the victims had been killed in extrajudicial killings. The journalists who first reported on the story subsequently went into protective hiding, while a later Council of Europe report released in 2021 described the events as, quote, "the single most egregious example of violence against LGBT people in Europe that had occurred in decades," end quote. When pressed about Chechnya's heavy persecution of its LGBT community in July of 2017 during an interview with HBO, Kadyrov infamously responded that no such persecutions were taking place, because he claimed that gay people simply didn't exist in Chechnya. Then he added that if anybody was gay in Chechnya, they would be killed by their own families before his regime had the opportunity to persecute them and place them in jail. Now, understandably, these comments and the accusations attributed to his regime of severe human rights abuses attracted an enormous amount of international outcry against Kadyrov and led to a dramatic ratcheting up of international sanctions placed on him. The UK had begun sanctioning him back in 2014 due to his support of the Russian war effort in eastern Ukraine, and then the US began sanctioning him in December of 2017 due to his involvement in the repression, torture, and murder of Chechnya's LGBT community and his political opponents and critics, while his regime's policies and actions continued to embarrass the Kremlin internationally, forcing multiple high-level Russian officials to publicly defend Kadyrov's denials of the anti-gay persecutions even taking place, rather than risk throwing him under the bus and unleashing the chaos and instability of the 1990s again in Chechnya. And then came Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in early 2022, which only began turbocharging Kadyrov's autonomy in Chechnya and his vassal-like relationship with Putin even further. Openly describing himself as Putin's foot soldier, Kadyrov rallied around the Russian invasion of Ukraine with his typical displays of bravado on social media. By this point, with his own private army, the Kadyrovtsy, believed to be 70,000 men strong and well-armed directly by the Kremlin, Kadyrov immediately declared that his army was attacking Ukraine as well. Allegedly, right when the invasion began, the Kremlin had tasked the Kadyrovtsy, with their extensive expertise in foreign assassinations, to infiltrate the Ukrainian capital in Kyiv and to kill Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky. They failed in that initial task, and then they were transitioned into becoming rearguard barrier and occupation troops. With their extensive and brutal counterinsurgency experience in Chechnya stretching back decades, the Kadyrovtsy have since been tasked with suppressing Ukrainian partisan resistance in the Russian-occupied territories of Ukraine behind the front lines, while they've also been tasked with policing the rear of the front lines in order to harshly discipline any deserting Russian soldiers. Russian soldiers who desert from the front and are unlucky enough to encounter the Kadyrovtsy may become subjected to beatings, torture, and even summary executions, a legacy of the brutal fighting between Russians and Chechens from the 1990s that enables the Kadyrovtsy to pursue this task with very little qualms, and helping to instill a deep fear in the Russian soldiers of what might happen to them if they choose to abandon their posts. Despite this, the Kadyrovtsy and Kadyrov himself routinely boast of their supposed victories along the front lines in Ukraine on social media, which has led to the Ukrainians nicknaming them as Putin's TikTok warriors. On at least two separate occasions during the early stages of the invasion of Ukraine, Kadyrov himself claimed to be present in Ukraine along with his soldiers bravely fighting on the front that were both disproven by a report made by The Telegraph. In one case, Kadyrov posted a photo to his Telegram account claiming that he was present in Mariupol during the battle for control of the city. But the brand of the gas station shown in the background of the photo, Pulsar, which is owned by the Russian oil company Rosneft, has never operated in Ukraine. Since then, Kadyrov has increasingly attempted to justify Chechnya's participation in the Ukraine invasion by calling it a jihad for Russia's Muslims being waged against the West, interestingly mirroring the Russian Orthodox Church's own propaganda that also consistently portrays the Ukraine invasion as a crusade being waged by the Orthodox Christian Russians against the hostile West. Kadyrov has also frequently been among the most outspoken, extreme hardliners in Russia relating to the war. In September of 2022, furious over Russia's humiliating withdrawal from Izium in the north in the face of Ukrainian counterattacks, Kadyrov openly called for martial law and full-scale military mobilization to be declared all across Russia. But then, just 12 days later after making those comments when Russia introduced a partial military mobilization, Kadyrov ended up saying that those mobilization orders wouldn't actually be implemented within Chechnya. A month later, in October of 2022, after the Russians lost control over the Ukrainian town of Lyman, Kadyrov openly called on Russia to deploy a tactical nuclear weapon in Ukraine to reverse their losses. And then a couple of days later, he declared that he was sending his own three underage sons, who were then aged 14, 15, and 16, as child soldiers to the front lines in Ukraine, which was astonishingly on his part an open admission of an internationally recognized war crime. By May of 2024, Kadyrov claimed that he had deployed a total of 43,500 of his own soldiers to the war in Ukraine, further solidifying his personal commitment to Putin. But the lengths of Kadyrov's almost total autonomy in Chechnya would soon be tested as they had never been tested before. In December of 2024, Azerbaijan Airlines Flight 8243 was a regularly scheduled passenger flight between Baku, Azerbaijan, and Chechnya's capital city, Grozny, carrying 67 passengers and crew on board on the 25th of December. As the flight was approaching its landing in Grozny over Chechen airspace, the plane was heavily damaged by what has only been officially described as external objects that penetrated its structure, which is most widely believed outside of Russian sources to have been a Russian or Chechen-fired surface-to-air missile. Likely wishing to cover the accident up by forcing a crash within Russia they could control, the flight was denied the ability to land anywhere in Russia, which forced the pilots of the aircraft to heroically divert the aircraft completely across the entire Caspian Sea to Kazakhstan, where it ultimately crashed just short of the international airport in the city of Aktau. killing 38 people on board, including both pilots, but leaving 29 eyewitness survivors behind. The whole incident tested the limits of how far Putin would go in defending Kadyrov's regime and its autonomy in Chechnya like nothing before. Azerbaijani authorities understandably wanted heads to roll for the disaster, and they almost immediately concluded that it was indeed a Russian surface-to-air missile that had shot the plane down. This caught Putin in an incredible diplomatic conundrum. On the one hand, he could accept responsibility for the disaster and harshly reprimand Kadyrov and appease Azerbaijan, an important foreign post-Soviet country, and risk unleashing the flames of separatism in Chechnya again at a critical time during the war in Ukraine. Or, on the other hand, he could cover for Kadyrov and keep his unwavering loyalty and risk trashing Russia's foreign relations with Azerbaijan. Putin ultimately chose to take the latter route and apologized to the Azerbaijani president for the incident, but without accepting any responsibility or offering any punishment, which enraged the Azerbaijani president to the point where he openly accused Russia of attempting to cover the crash up, and accompanied by demands for a complete admission of guilt, punishment for the soldiers who were responsible, and full compensation to the victims and their families, none of which to this video's production date have ever been provided by either Kadyrov or Putin. Putin chose strained relations with Azerbaijan over strained relations with Kadyrov, a testament to how influential and powerful Kadyrov has really become in Chechnya since the war in Ukraine began. In the spring of 2024, the Kadyrov regime in Chechnya attracted international attention again when they banned all music in the territory slower than 80 beats per minute and faster than 116 beats per minute, with the stated goal of eliminating all Western music in Chechnya. The new laws effectively made virtually all club music like techno, house, and dubstep illegal to be played in public in Chechnya, adding on to the list of other strict legal restrictions in Chechnya that are different from the rest of Russia. Kadyrov has also spent years as the ruler of Chechnya, carefully positioning his own family members into other positions of power and solidifying his own future succession, with the goal of keeping his own familial dynasty in power in Chechnya. The exact numbers of children that Kadyrov has today is a matter of some dispute, as are the numbers of wives he has. Some reports have claimed that Kadyrov has 10 children today, while other sources claim 12, and still other sources claim the figure is 14. Kadyrov himself has recently suggested in July of 2023 that he has 14 children. After the United States imposed a new series of sanctions on him, his known wife, and his two eldest daughters, after which he boasted that he still had 12 other unsanctioned children as well. Many of Kadyrov's children have been installed into major positions of power in Chechnya. Out of the top 23 positions within the Chechen government today, 6 of them are held by Kadyrov's own children or by their spouses, while 5 of them are held by more distant family relatives, while the 3 sons who he claimed to have sent off to war in Ukraine in 2022 have attracted the most attention as his possible future dynastic successors. The sheer level of propaganda that has surrounded these 3 boys out of Chechnya is a continuation of the pervasive cult of personality that has surrounded their father in the territory for decades now. All 3 of the boys, Ahmad, Ali, and Adam, have been promoted in Chechnya's MMA fight club for years, ever since they were aged as young as 8, with their fights broadcast live all across Russia despite the fact that full contact fighting between children is illegal in Russia. Kadyrov has been able to utilize his position to give them private MMA training sessions with real UFC fighters, and they have frequently been featured in fights in Chechnya that are widely believed to have been given predetermined results. At the age of only 6 years old, Kadyrov rather outrageously claimed that his son Adam had become the youngest Hafiz in Russian history. Hafiz meaning someone who had completely memorized the entire Quran by heart. In October of 2022, shortly after claiming to have sent the 3 boys off to war in Ukraine, Kadyrov posted a video to his Telegram account that claimed to show the 3 boys delivering him 3 captured Ukrainian soldiers, whom he rather outrageously claimed were captured by the underage boys during a special operation when they were aged only 14, 15, and 16. Since then, the boys have been frequently featured in Kadyrov's propaganda videos shooting guns and rocket launchers, with Kadyrov boasting that they have been trained for combat since their earliest days. In November of 2023, a video was released of his then 15-year-old son Adam, who is declared to have been Russia's youngest ever Hafiz at the age of 6, beating up a Russian prisoner who was allegedly guilty of burning a Quran. When Kadyrov was later asked if he would punish his son for the video by a reporter at a press conference, Kadyrov said that there was nothing to punish him for at all, and that it would have been even better if his son had simply killed the prisoner. Days after that video was released, Kadyrov promoted the 15-year-old Adam to the head of his own security detail, and then later claimed that he'd even outperformed Russian special forces during a shooting competition, leading to rumors that the young Adam was being groomed by Kadyrov to become his eventual successor in Chechnya, as Kadyrov himself had once been the head of his own father's security detail as well before he succeeded him. Further solidifying the dynastic succession and the cult of personality around the Kadyrov family in Chechnya, the Chechen constitution was amended in February of 2023 to bestow Kadyrov with his new title, the Father of the People, a title that his own father, Akhmad Kadyrov, had been posthumously bestowed with following his assassination in 2004. The language of the amendment also clarified that the Father of the People title would also extend to all future leaders of Chechnya as well, likely implying that the title will be hereditary and will someday pass down to one of Kadyrov's sons who succeeds him as well. Nonetheless, Adam Kadyrov is today, as of this video's production, only 17 years old, while Kadyrov's eldest son, Akhmad Jr., is only 19 years old. As per the Chechen constitution, any future leader of Chechnya must still be at least 30 years old, a problem that similarly arose after Kadyrov's father was assassinated back in 2004, at a time when he was only 27 years old. Kadyrov himself is currently still fairly young at just 48 years old, but there have been consistent rumors that suggest he is currently in ill health, leading to the risk of a potential succession crisis among his children and other potential rivals erupting in Chechnya if he is to die prematurely. Kadyrov's own loyalty is also still ultimately tied to Putin personally, rather than to Russia more broadly. If Putin is removed from power in the Kremlin for whatever reason and Kadyrov or one of his sons remains in charge in Chechnya, there's no telling what might end up happening next. Kadyrov or his successors could attempt to use their autonomy and their tens of thousands of personal soldiers to reassert Chechnya's full-blown independence again. Or, cut off from Russia's generous financial subsidies that have been provided by Putin, they might find themselves in a position where they're not able to pay their soldiers' salaries anymore. And so the soldiers might end up revolting against the family that many Chechens continue to still view as Russia's collaborators or puppets, throwing Chechnya back into another era of unpredictable chaos on Russia's frontiers like back during the 1990s again. No matter what ends up happening, the tenuous dynamic between Chechnya and Russia that exists only because of the personal relationship between Kadyrov and Putin will likely take a radical turn once one of them eventually leaves from power or dies. But until then, Chechnya will likely remain a formidable and totalitarian dynastic state within a state inside of Russia, based around the cult of personality of the Kadyrov family, almost entirely autonomous and separate, connected only by a thread to the rest of Russia through Kadyrov and Putin's vassal and lord-style relationship, in all but name, remaining the North Korea of modern-day Europe. Over the past month, there have been a lot of developments that have taken place in the war between Russia and Ukraine. Most spectacularly, the Ukrainians carried out a top-secret operation more than 18 months in the making, in which they managed to smuggle more than 100 explosive kamikaze drones on trucks into Russia, which they used to attack Russia's strategic nuclear bomber fleet and other aircraft across 5 air bases throughout the country, destroying around 20 of Russia's most advanced aircraft and causing around $7 billion worth of damage to the Russian Air Force in the process, using only $234,000 worth of drones to do so, making it probably one of the most cost-effective attacks ever carried out in the history of warfare. But tons of other major developments in the war have taken place recently as well. For the first time in more than 3 years since the early stages of the invasion, Russia and Ukraine began holding their first direct ceasefire negotiations last month as well. Russia carried out what is to date its biggest aerial bombardment of Ukraine's capital that utilized nearly 400 missiles and drones, and Russia further clarified that its demands to end the war included a written pledge from NATO to permanently stop expanding any further into the post-Soviet world, writing off any chance of NATO membership ever being extended to Ukraine as well as to Georgia. I also made a video that covers all of these breaking developing events between Ukraine and Russia, and all of the other major breaking geopolitical news that you might have missed from ongoing conflicts around the world in my War Room series. There are so many important things that are currently happening from developing conflicts around the world that it's almost impossible to actually keep up with it all, no matter how well-informed you want to be about them. The latest episode of War Room covers all of the most important global conflict developments that took place last month or in May that you might have missed in all the noise. And you can go and watch it right now on Nebula. Because of the inherently violent, controversial, and recent nature of discussing developing events from major conflicts all around the world, this War Room series would never work on YouTube because every episode would be instantly demonetized and age-restricted. Which means the YouTube's algorithm, which is based around showing you ads, would never be incentivized to actually show the videos to you or to promote them. I deal with very large numbers of my videos on YouTube getting demonetized and age-restricted as they are. And that's why I upload all of my episodes in War Room exclusively to Nebula. And why signing up to Nebula is the absolute best thing that you can do to support me and my channel. And by doing so, you'll also get access to way more content than just my own exclusive War Room series as well. Because the best part about Nebula is that it's jointly co-owned by myself and hundreds of other independent creators that empowers us to make the projects that we're deeply excited about without any fear of being censored or demonetized like we are on YouTube. That's why there's tons of other new unique content on Nebula that's coming out all the time too that you'll also love. Like my own separate modern conflict series with 50 additional episodes that you can also watch covering dozens of other recent conflicts more in depth. Including this one that covers the entire history of the first and second Chechen wars waged across the 1990s that includes a lot of darker context and information that would have made this video about Chechnya that you just watched on YouTube demonetized. Along with tons of other exclusive series from other creators you probably also already know like Wendover Productions, Polymatter, and Neo. I also know that there's a lot of streaming platforms out there right now you probably don't want to get stuck with another monthly cost to keep track of. But I also know that if you've watched this all the way through to the end, there is just so much content on Nebula that you'll love as well, and so much more coming out with every new month, that you could consider a lifetime membership to Nebula. You just pay once, and then you'll get lifetime access to everything that I and hundreds of other creators will ever produce on Nebula for as long as we both last, and then you'll never have to worry about a recurring subscription or ads ever again. That's the best way possible to support what I'm doing here on Real Life Lore. But even if you'd rather not make that large of an upfront commitment, you can still greatly help support me by signing up for a yearly or a monthly subscription to Nebula as well, which you can get for a fantastic deal with 40% off by scanning the QR code or clicking the button here on your screen right now, or by following the link that's down below in the description, any of which will also get you access to everything on Nebula for the very low price of just $3 per month or $36 for a whole year. I hope that you'll consider signing up, and as always, thank you so much for watching.